Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football Garbage Time NFL Podcast, AFC North Preview Edition. Yes, we're back after a week off. We've had a chance to collect our thoughts after the great 4th of July weekend, and we're back with more information for you. My name is Hakun Wong. I'm the editor-in-chief of Football Garbage Time, and with me, as always, is senior staff writer Ryan Whitfield. Hey, Ryan, how you doing? How'd you enjoy your 4th of July weekend?
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed the 4th of July. Got a little traveling in, spent some time with the family. It was a nice long weekend for sure.
Yeah, you know, I have to say that this is the first year that I missed the fireworks everywhere I went. Like, I've seen fireworks every 4th of July going back to when I was 5 and missed it this year. I'm so disappointed. Did you see fireworks this time around?
We did. Our first attempt, we went to Connecticut, actually, to Mystic. And they got rained out that night, but then we caught them the next night back home. So we were able to find one at least. So we made it work.
Well, you did better than I did. So we got a lot to talk about, although it is a little bit slow right now. It's slow all across sports. As you know, even baseball is taking a break. Are you a fan of the Home Run Derby, Ryan?
It's one of the few all-star events outside of the 3v3 NHL all-star format that I do still enjoy. It's
right.
A little bit spoiled. Being 28, you know, my peak year was when I was 11 years old, and you had the McGuire Sosa Vaughn Festival at Fenway Park, back in the height of the steroid era, which they can't go back to. But so it's all tainted after that, but I still do enjoy it.
You know, they're on pace this year to totally destroy the old record for a season, for a number of home runs in a season. It was like 5,600 something. This year we're on pace for over 6,000 home runs. So who knows? Maybe they just found a way. I heard there's a lot of uppercut swings. This should be a fun home run derby to hold us over. But hey, we're here for football, so let's turn it on. Let's go. All right, so there's a bunch of things that we're going to talk about today, and we're going to start with Rashad Jennings, who some of you may know was on Dancing with the Stars recently and won that competition. Yeah, that's how I feel about it as well. So tell me, Ryan, did you watch Dancing with the Stars this year with Rashad Jennings?
No, I did not. But Rashad Jennings has teased me and screwed me over in fantasy football about 3 years in a row. So he can pound sand for all I care.
Yeah, but David Ross was in there. I mean, come on. How could you not like David Ross? I mean, he was recently a Cub, but hey, he was also a Red Sox, right?
He was. He was on that horseshoe up the butt 2013 Sox team. So I do enjoy David Ross.
Yeah. All right. Well, so Rashad Jennings obviously has had very little play since then. He's done nothing but been on TV. He's won that competition. Now he's back to looking for another team. Now, he's had a little bit of a rough go of it. I mean, he's been the starting running back per se for the New York Giants for basically 2.5 years. He's never broken 1,000 yards, but he did have a decent year in 2015 where he did total 1,159 total yards from scrimmage, including yards receiving. He doesn't look to be the number one guy anywhere, but what are your thoughts about Rashad Jennings and his potential for landing someplace this offseason?
Yeah, I wouldn't sign him if I was anybody. He's a bum. He can't stay healthy. He underproduces. Can't hold on to the ball. I have about zero use for Rashad Jennings. So I'm not signing him. And to this point, looks like most GMs agree with me.
Yeah, I agree with that too. But I do think there is some potential for him being kind of a passing down guy. You want to take pressure off of your starter a little bit. I mean, he didn't do a lot of things well last year, but he did sport an 83.3% catch percentage last year, receiving the ball out of the backfield on 42 targets. So he's not totally toast, but I don't think he's going to be a starter anywhere. Any thoughts on where he might, what you think he might end up with? Maybe like a second guy. I mean, I don't know if they need anybody like this, but maybe a second guy on a team like, for instance, the Steelers or something like that.
He could have a use there. I mean, maybe you throw him into the big veteran bowl of crap out in Seattle, see if he sticks. You know, I would even a place like Oakland would make sense to me. I know, and trust me, I've been a Marshawn Lynch fan before the rest of you all caught on to how cool he was in Seattle back in his Buffalo days when he was doing that glorious main event, the Kenny Mayne segment where he's in Buffalo taking him out to Dave and Buster's. But this idea that at 31 you can come back after a year off and still be the guy that you once were, you know, I think a lot of people fall in love with the name out there, and I wouldn't be surprised if Marshawn, especially out of the gate, is slow. So maybe throw him into the pile out there in Oakland. But you know, he's the epitome of a guy you throw in late at veteran minimum into a camp, and if you get lucky, then great. But I'm not banking on anything out of that.
Right, I agree. And I think in Oakland they have Jalen Richard, and they also have Dwayne Washington. So it'll be interesting. If they throw him in there, he'll just be part of the morass of backup running backs. But it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And you're right, checking out those situations, like the ones with veterans who might not have anything left in the tank. Another one that comes to mind is Eddie Lacy. He might not have anything left in the tank, so who knows what's going to happen out there in Seattle, although they have a lot of other options as well. So let's go ahead and move on to the next guy that I want to talk about, and that's Dion Lewis. Over at the Patriots. And, you know, he was kind of a breakout guy 2 years ago, but due to injury, he hasn't really done much since. And now they've signed a ton of people. So, you know, they have Gillislee there, they have Rex Burkhead there, and they actually extended James White to 2020, I believe. So is it time to cut Dion Lewis? Is that completely, is that what is crazy?
No, it's not crazy. I think if anybody out of that group does get cut, I mean, I think there's a chance there's going to be a five guys in the backfield. You know, the Patriots have that rare situation where they really value special teams guys. You routinely see the Patriots keep six receivers, and you know, most people forget that Matthew Slater is one of those six because he never goes out on offense. And and out of the backfield, you know, obviously you talked about the three guys with Dion Lewis four there. But the fifth guy, Brandon Bolden, might be the second best special team guy in the league, if you ask me, right behind Matthew Slater, and they're both on the Patriots. I think he brings a tremendous amount of value. He's routinely in there blocking punts and kicks, and he's great on the kick return team in a blocking role and on the cover team. So I don't think you move on from Brandon Bolden because I think he brings too much other stuff and there's a lot of redundancy at that position. I love Dion Lewis. Outside of Gillislee, who it's a toss-up, but I mean, we'll see what Gillislee looks like this year. But I think from a pure talent and skill perspective, Dion is the best back they have. But the guy can't stay healthy. He's never been healthy in the NFL. Dave Wann said in college, absolutely ran him into the ground and probably ruined his career for him, how much they leaned on him in Pitt. And so he's just never been in the same sense, and he's a small kid. You know, last year took forever to get going, coming off that, you know, that setback he had after the injury in 2015. And then, you know, you forget about it. At the end of regulation, the Super Bowl, they ran that trick play to him, and he looked like he hyperextended his knee there. I thought he tore it again. He just planted his leg and spun, and the Patriots trick play there at the end got stopped because he couldn't move anymore, and he rolled out of bounds and was attended to there. So, you can't bank on the guy being healthy. I think it was more likely he would have been traded had that injury not happened in the Super Bowl. I think there's too many GMs out there aware. So maybe, you know, if it comes down to roster decision, he could get beat out and cut. But I think it'd be unlikely to be traded because I don't think he has a lot of value right now because you have to see a full season of health before anyone's willing to deal anything of real value for him.
Yeah, he's never played all 16 games. In the last 2 years, only played 14 total games. He still is averaging approximately 4.5 yards per carry over the last 2 years, but his average per reception has dropped in half from 10.8 to 5.5. I agree. I think there are some issues and there's some injury risk as well. I don't know. I think it makes sense for the Patriots to move on from him. They have plenty of other running backs to choose from. So let's move on to our next topic, because this is one you introduced, and this is actually, you know, old players. Because, you know, in the NFL, clearly it's a young man's game. You get over age 30, people start to get a little bit worried. You get over age 35, and people are like, right? I mean, it's basically like, what are we going to do now? These guys can hardly play. You go up to 37, 38, 39, and 40 years old, and what the heck are they doing on the field? But that's what we're seeing a lot with quarterbacks in the NFL, including such quarterbacks as Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Philip Rivers, Eli Manning, and others. And you pointed out an article which talked about a lot of this. And tell me, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so the article, I'm spacing on the writer's name here, but I know he's done some work on Football Outsiders.
Yeah, Cian Fahey, I think his name is. Yep.
This is a dual case of trying too hard and stats are for bleeping losers. I think as far as there's a lot of Patriot hunks out there, and rightfully so, if you remember the five rings in the last 16 years.
right.
So I think even myself, I'm susceptible to being a Patriot honk a little bit, right? But I've been on the show multiple times over the last couple of years saying that I'm not the person that thinks that Brady is going to play at an elite level until 45 or 46 years old. I do, like I said, my ideal situation is that the Patriots win the Super Bowl this year, Brady finally decides to hang it up, and we don't have to worry about, you know, the pain of cutting him, and we get to move on to Jimmy G. So I'm not this Brady is God and can do no wrong type person. But the stat that was really highlighted in this article, it might be the most asinine, irritating, and just mind-blowing stat I've ever heard of. Passes that could have been intercepted. That is the dumbest, most moronic thing I have ever heard as a qualifying stat before. I'm going to start judging baseball pitching. I'm going to create a new baseball pitching stat that's pitches that could have been swung and missed at. Like, this is the dumbest thing ever. They weren't intercepted. I don't care if they could have been. They weren't. I don't know how you look at a guy who do that comeback and come back and make up a stat about passes that could have been picked to sit there and disqualify him. I'm sorry. I don't care what you say about his arm strength. And the dangerous balls he threw, the comeback route on the outside on the left to Malcolm Mitchell late in that game, and the pass where they were, I think it was like 3rd and 10 on the drive to tie it, deep in their own zone, have to have it moment, and Brady, while being pressured off his back foot, throws a dart on an out route for about 15 yards to Chris Hogan on the sideline. You look at those passes, and you're going to come out with passes that could have been intercepted as your defense for why there's clearly a decline for Brady here. And then in the article goes on to cite people like Eli Manning, who hasn't been good in 3 seasons, and Drew Brees, who hasn't had a winning record in 3 seasons. And that's what you're going to start comparing it to? Come on, man. Unbelievable. What a horse crap of an article. Talk about needing to find something to write about in July.
So tell us how you really feel about that, Ryan. So let me ask you this question. So I can tell that you have confidence in Drew Brees. I'm sorry, Tom Brady. Drew Brees, jeez. Tom Brady. But let's talk about the worryometer here, 10 being super worried, 0 being not worried at all for the 2017 season. I'm going to ask you each of those 4 quarterbacks. What's your worryometer score for Tom Brady?
I'd put it at 5. I put it right in the middle. I don't think he's on the decline, but quarterbacks at that age, it happens overnight. Brett Favre takes the Vikings to the NFC Championship on an amazing season, and the next year he couldn't get out of week 6. So, I mean, the cliff is coming someday. You know, you always have to be cautious about your optimism with him.
What about Drew Brees?
Drew Brees, I'd put a 7. I don't think he's been particularly great. I think he's still put up good stats, but he hasn't been, you know, winning games, and they don't have a great defense, but they never had a great defense, and that used to still result in 10-6, 11-5 seasons. So I think his best years are clearly behind him, and I think it's shown on the field.
Yep, and then Philip Rivers?
I'll go a 6 on Rivers. I know he's been wildly inconsistent, but I think he's been wildly inconsistent most of his career. So I think he's roughly still the same quarterback he's always been, and he has good games and bad games, but I still think he's good enough to get his team to the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm going to brace myself. Let's talk about Eli Manning.
10.
Wow, 10. So basically, you think he's just going to combust on the field this year?
He hasn't been good in a couple years. And maybe it's the allure of them beating us twice in the Super Bowl, but every year I bite in on this – on this Giants team. I mean, I overdrafted Sterling Shepard in almost every single fantasy draft last year because I said, oh, my God, you have a secondary weapon to put next to Odell for the first time in his career. Because, you know, what Victor Cruz had been, I'm like, oh, you know, this guy, this is the year. And Eli Manning was still subpar last year. I just don't think he's good anymore. So I put it at a 10. Well, I mean, past the 10. I don't think I'm worried about the edge coming for him. I think it's come. It's gone. He's at the bottom looking up.
Well, he's got a lot of weapons this year, so if he can't make it happen, then he may be at that 11 already. All right, let's go ahead and ring the bell on this segment of the show. Let's move on to the next segment, which is our preview of the AFC North. So what I want to do is start with the Baltimore Ravens going into the 2017 season. In 2016, they ended up 8-8 in the AFC North. They really didn't go anywhere. They had some real issues on offense. They did add a little bit in their draft in cornerback Marlon Humphrey, linebacker Tyus Bowser, and defensive tackle Chris Wormley. So they clearly were working on building up their defense. But their offense has been a problem, and they've now lost tackle Ricky Wagner, one of their big tackles, one of the solid guys in their line. And, of course, they're still saddled with Joe Flacco, who is going to be the biggest salary cap hit in all of football at $24.5 million in 2017. So what do you think about the Baltimore Ravens?
Yeah, I think they're still a middling team, but the law of averages say that once every 3 or 4 years they pop. They've obviously had a couple bad years in a row here. And I have a lot of respect for that franchise too. And I think John Harbaugh is the second best coach in the NFL currently. And I feel like they have to put it together at some point. My big hesitation is that I think that defense, you know, has been good the last couple years. Not elite like it's been in the past, but I think they've been good enough, and C.J. Mosley is an absolute beast. And so that's not the side of the ball I would have invested in. The fact that they did invest in that side of the ball tells me Ozzie Newsome, who's been around, you know, for two Super Bowl championships, he's been around for, you know, the Browns before that. He's been around for, you know, a long time, right? So he's a smart guy, and I think he's one of the smarter execs in the NFL. The fact that he looked at the roster and kind of came to the conclusion that they need to have, you know, an elite defense means that he no longer believes in Joe Flacco. If he believed in Flacco at all, he would be investing more in the weapons there. But the fact that they tried to really load up on defense says to me that they think the only way they can win is by having a dominant defense, which means whatever they're seeing on the All-22s is that Flacco's not the guy he once was. And I think Flacco can be a bit monotone and can be, can have tendencies to be a bum sometimes, but I still want to put him at the lower end of the top 10, but I still want to put him in top 10 in the NFL quarterbacks. We've seen what he can do in the playoffs. We've seen what the high end can be. So maybe I fall in love with that too much, but, I want to say 10-6 for the Ravens. But I think they sneak out one more win than last year and have a 9-7 season.
Yeah, I think they're kind of a middling team as well. I don't have a lot of faith in them actually getting much better. I think Flacco has been checking down like nobody's business last year. He had a career low 6.4 yards per completion, and that's because all that was checked down to Dennis Pitta. And quite frankly, they had the eighth best offensive line in NFL, so that's no real excuse aside from the fact they don't have any weapons. And I think you're right, they don't believe in Flacco anymore, but they are saddled with him until at least 2019. Let's move on to the next team in the AFC North, and that's the Cincinnati Bengals. Last year ended a disappointing 6-9-1, third in the AFC North. In the draft, interestingly, took John Ross, the wide receiver, speedy wide receiver in round one, and then went to defensive end Jordan Willis in round three. They took Joe Mixon, the running back, at round two, the questionable off-field issues, and they got Kevin Minter, the linebacker, in free agency. They did lose the aforementioned Rex Burkhead to the Patriots, and they lost two significant members of their offensive line in tackle Andrew Whitworth and guard Kevin Zeitler, probably one of the best top guards in football when he went to Cleveland. I'm not sure what to expect there, but there's not much happening, and A.J. Green is really the best they have, and that's squandering his years away. What do you think about the Cincinnati Bengals in 2017?
Yeah, I'm going middling 8-8 with them. I'm not impressed with their offseason. Joe Mixon having, as you put it, some off-field issues was about the nicest way you could have phrased that. I'm not buying in on the Bengals' bounce back here. And, you know, at the end of the day, they have a really big issue, which is their best two players are Andy Dalton, who craps his pants in big games, and A.J. Green, who is, in my opinion, one of the softest receivers in the NFL. He's great when he's out ahead. When he's having a 3-touchdown game, he can really put it on you. But he's not, you know, he's not the guy that's going to go out there and fight for every yard and fight for every inch. So I don't believe he in the big games comes through. You know, often if you watch their big games, all the years to talk about how bad Andy Dalton is on Thursday Night Football or any primetime game, and you have to talk about Thursday Night Football because they don't get other primetime games. But go watch AJ Green in those games because he's hard to find, so you have to really look for him. And then the defense, you know, it can work for a couple years, but. I mean, eventually, once you have a bunch of bad guys in one spot, it's like the 49ers a couple years ago. Eventually, the inmates run the asylum, and when you invest in Pac-Man Jones and you invest in Vontaze Burfict and guys of that nature, and now you add Joe Mixon to the crowd, God, what a nice group of guys they got there in Cincy, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I have to say this, though. It has been working on their defensive line with Vontaze Burfict, say what you want about his off-field issues and his attitude, but he has been a pretty good performer for the defensive line with Geno Atkins, Carlos Dunlap, and Vinny Ray. The problem I see from a football perspective is that their quarterbacks are just pretty dreadful. They got Dre Kirkpatrick, Darquez Denard there right now. They really were first-round selections in 12 and 14, and they really haven't earned it. It's a little bit of a mess there. And when Andrew Whitworth left the team to go to the Rams, He actually was quoted saying, I really wanted to be away from Cincinnati's situation. I think that's a problem. Cincinnati is not a football team anymore. It's a situation, and players just don't want to be there. And I think a lot of it is that in-locker room type of atmosphere that's built by these types of people like Vontaze Burfict and Joe Mixon and so on, as you mentioned. But they just don't have any direction right now, and they're wasting away A.J. Green, one of the best, arguably one of the best wide receivers in football. Did you have any thoughts on what their record would be in 2017?
Yeah, they'll be 8-8. You know, it's a top-down thing. It's a horrible ownership group that doesn't care about anything other than getting one playoff game at home so they can cash in on the playoff seats. They can't fill the stadium. It is a situation. It is the equivalent of the NFL's dumpster.
Yep, I agree. All right, let's move on to the next team, and that's the Cleveland Browns. The woeful Browns ended 1-15 last year. They did do a lot to shore up their offense and defense. They did pick up center J.C. Tretta of free agency and the aforementioned Kevin Zeitler, one of the best guards in football. They drafted Myles Garrett, defensive end, Jabril Peppers, and they also managed to draft David Njoku, a tight end that was a lot of upside, and they picked up Kenny Britton free agency. Whether that's good or not, who knows? But they managed to lose Andrew Hawkins. They lost Josh McCown, not a big deal there. They lost Tremont Williams, someone they picked up and had high hopes for only 2 years ago. They lost Terrell Pryor, who took a step forward, and others. I don't know. I mean, they only have a set quarterback right now. It could be DeShone Kizer. It could be Cody Kessler. What are your thoughts about the Cleveland Browns in 2017?
You know, I might have to start applying over at ESPN because the trick of a hot sports take at ESPN is that you just keep making the same prediction year after year after year after year. And if you do the rain dance of long enough, eventually it's going to rain, right? So I'm going to buy in on the Cleveland Browns again. I'm going to buy in again. I like their offseason again. I want to believe. I want them to be relevant. I think they have one of the greatest uniforms in the NFL. They once were a historic franchise. I love the Myles Garrett pick. I love the Jabril Peppers pick. I think Kaiser's got as good a shot as any of them, except for your boys' pick there, out of the quarterbacks to do some, to have maybe a good season.
Yep.
Hugh Jackson is supposed to be the QB whisperer, so let's see it. And so, and I think Corey Coleman takes a step forward this year. You know, so I'm buying in. I want to believe. And, you know, you got Myles Garrett, you got Peppers, you got Jamie Collins, Joe Hayden. I mean, I don't know, at some of the most important positions, you have a pretty good, you know, on defense, you have a good setup. So I want to believe, and I'm choosing to believe. With that said, believing for me is them going 5-11 this year.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right. Yeah, right, exactly. They're improving, and they definitely worked finally on improving. I mean, really taking advantage of that strong offensive line, improving it. They've improved their defense. They've given a couple options out there on offense. They're giving some room for the running backs to be able to do some damage. They could do something, and I think five wins sounds about reasonable. Let's talk about the last team in the AFC North, and that is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Last year, 11-5, ended up first in the AFC North. Lots of discussion about whether Ben Roethlisberger was going to retire or not, and obviously he is not going to do that. They do have some significant additions, though. They managed to draft wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster, and they took outside linebacker T.J. Watt, that's right, J.J. Watt's brother, in the first round, and they also picked up running back James Conner in the third round. So there's a lot of things there that they picked up. They're not waiting for the rest of their wide receiving core to catch up to Antonio Brown. They're taking a shot with some other people. What do you think about the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the class of the AFC North will probably be the second, at worst, third best team in the AFC. I still think the Texans could surpass them, but that defense is on the rise. You know, why am I forgetting the linebacker's name there?
Bud Dupree or Cameron Hayward?
Not Bud Dupree. Shazier. Jesus. Ryan Shazier.
Bud Dupree. Okay.
We got our favorite alum over there, Stephon Tuitt,
yeah.
You know, Artie Burns. So they have a lot of good pieces on the defense, and I think they finally start to kind of hit their stride as far as their age coming along. And the name I'm just going to keep saying, you know, again, Marshawn Lynch comes back, and everyone's all excited after a year off, but people are forgetting about Martavis Bryant, man. He is electric. And so as long as him and Le'Veon can not influence each other, hopefully it helps that LeGarrette's not going to be there to smoke them up, and they can stay on the field. Martavis Bryant could be one of the more dangerous guys in the NFL at the receiving position this year, and I think he gives them that 1-2 punch that they missed with Antonio Brown last year. And, you know, provided he gets the playoff and they don't go back to reverting the way that the Steelers always have of playing zone defense against the Patriots. And against Brady specifically, you know, they could give a real push to get to the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, they really need some corners and a good safety help. I mean, I know you don't like Artie Burns, their second-year corner, but he's going to have to take a step forward if they want to actually do something on defense. And, of course, their second-year safety, Sean Davis, he really has to take a step up as well. I'm not 100% sure that I trust that, but I think the offense is going to be just fine, particularly with Le'Veon Bell there. They're going to be just trucking along as they always do on offense. I just worry that they're going to be able to stop the ball. All right. So that brings us to the end of our AFC preview. Let me just ask you one last question before we sign off on that. You got a prediction for their record in 2017?
Yeah, I'm going to go 11-5 just because you can pencil Big Ben in for missing a game or two or three every season. And there's something like 1-11 in the last 12 games they've played without him at starting quarterback. So I think that'll come back again. So I am around 11-5, and I just want to clarify, I do not hate or dislike Artie Burns. They just reached for him when there were better cornerbacks still out there in the draft. You know, if they'd taken him as in the second, when the other guys were gone, and even if they'd taken him as like their second corner in that draft, I would have liked the pick. I just thought they'd reach for him, but I think he could be a middling number one corner on a good team.
Right, so he's going to be the best option they have, at least, if nothing else. All right, let's ring the bell on that. We are done with another week of the podcast. So, Ryan, give us your Instagram and your Twitter account so they can follow you.
Yeah, hey, a technical difficulty-free podcast here. So,
congratulations,
we're
rounding
into preseason four here. I know.
Yeah, just
getting ready for the season finally. Instagram is football_garbage_time, and my Twitter is @RyanWhitfieldNE.
All right, and follow me at FB Garbage Time. Until next week, enjoy your NFL week, and we'll be previewing more football for 2017 in a short period. Take care. Oh, and enjoy the Home Run Derby.
Absolutely.